Hi guys, and welcome to Ghost Stories. This is a low-key Halloween podcast where we're just here to get a little spooky. You know, it's just a little fun. Don't get offended, don't take it too seriously. Today's episode, we're going to explore the story of the famous Annabelle. That's right, Annabelle the doll. And we're going to look at the true story behind one of your favorite movie franchises, if you've ever seen it. And if you haven't, there's a whole bunch of movies based off this doll named Annabelle. So the story of Annabelle the doll, it very loosely inspires the film, and it actually is also the inspiration to the opening of the movie The Conjuring. Now, a lot of the information I've gathered is from Ed and Lorraine's Warren's website. I've mentioned them in the first episode, The Demon Murder Trial, and if you haven't listened to it, what are you doing with your life? But basically, they are a couple who are both now passed to investigate paranormal activity, and a lot of their investigations have led to blockbuster movies, so some people sometimes feel like that's a little shady. So, unlike the creepy porcelain doll from the films, Annabelle the doll was actually a Raggedy Ann doll, which I loved Raggedy Ann and Andy. They were some of my favorites as a kid, so this just makes it like a little bit worse for me. In 1970, a woman named Donna was gifted a vintage Raggedy Ann doll by her mother. It's blank. I didn't write who, but I'm going to go with mother. As a graduation present from nursing school, Donna put it on display in her room, as adult people do when they get dolls. After a few days had passed since she got the doll, her and her roommate Angie began to notice that there was something strange and kind of creepy about the doll. So the apartment was pretty small, so they would notice if things were out of place or if anything was, you know, not the norm, such as the doll moving. It started off with like minor position changes, like vogue, 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 vogue. And then it actually started moving to different rooms in the apartment in different places. Sometimes Donna would come home to find the doll in another room with her hands and legs crossed, or even standing up straight. So let me explain to you why this is horrifying beyond the whole, like, you know, there's a doll moving around just chilling in different positions posing in your apartment. Raggedy Ann and Raggedy Andy are raggedy. They're cloth dolls. Like, you can't make them stand up on their own. They're not like an action figure or, I mean, even Barbie, I guess you couldn't stand up on their own, but they're made of cloth. So you can't make a Raggedy Ann stand up on its own. So that's just freaking creepy. One time she left for work and the doll was on the couch and came back to find that the doll was back in her room with the door actually closed. So it's not just like the doll's moving around and stands on its own, but it can actually interact with the apartment around it. After about a month of this going on, which, like, why are you waiting an entire month? Like, this is just happening and you're just... A whole month has gone by with this doll being freaking creepy, and you're like, well, I'm just gonna keep living my life. Sorry, that was a tangent. So after about a month of the doll changing positions, moving around the house, they started to find little pieces of parchment with little notes scribbled onto it. The notes were written in a child's handwriting and said things like, help Lou, L-O-U, and help us. Apparently, they were in on parchment paper, and like a normal person who's not alive in the 1700s, Donna didn't have parchment paper in her apartment. So how the doll is conjuring up pieces of paper like that, I'm not sure. One night, Donna came home to find that the doll had again moved into her room, but this time she sensed something was off. All the other times that the doll moving around, standing on its own, that didn't feel like something was off, but this time she sensed something was off, because at this point, the doll's unexplainable moving around the house was expected. Which, excuse me, but what? What? Like, you now live in a world where you just expect an inanimate object to just constantly move around the house every time you come back. And I'm like, let's just think about this, okay? Let's look at this from Angie's perspective, the roommate, right? Like, your friend graduates from nursing school and somebody gets her this doll's a gift and she puts it in your room and you don't even think of it. Then you come home and the doll's in another position and you're like, well, that's weird. And this just keeps happening. few weeks go by, the doll just keeps moving around. It's just standing up, and it's a doll that cannot stand on its own. And you start finding pieces of parchment paper, of all things, with child's handwriting that says, "Help us. Help Lou." It's like, this was the 1970s, okay? Like, I don't know if they were tripping on shit, but I could understand if this was like 2019 and you had a rent-controlled apartment in Santa Monica and you're like, look, this is what I just have to put up with. The deal is too good. I can't give up this, like, price that I'm paying, so I'm going to put up with some weird-ass doll that keeps moving around the house and is, like, sending us creepy messages. This was 1970s. Like, come on. How good of a deal did you have on rent that you're going to keep putting up with this? I mean, it's just, like, ridiculous, you know? And it's, like, the fact that Donna didn't read into this, you know what I mean? It's like, she's like a nurse. She's a woman of science. So you come home and your science-driven roommate's like, oh yeah, the doll moves around, it's normal. And you're like, okay. I mean, at this point, it's ridiculous. So anyway, Donna comes home and this time she's finally like, something might be off. And she goes to inspect the doll and finds little red drops that are presumably blood on her hands and chest. And you think, being a nurse, that, you know, she's probably seen a lot, and nothing would faze her, but this time, she was finally scared, and she got desperate, so she decided to seek out the help of a medium, because she's, like, bonded to this doll, and I think it's interesting that in a lot of stories, whether it's you believe that they're true or that they're fiction, it's usually a little girl that's like the center of being possessed or being demonic or being the demon or whatever. Because it's like in our society, it's like the epitome of innocence is a little girl. Like if this was like a G.I. Joe that got possessed, she probably would have chucked that shit out like day one. But since it's Raggedy Ann, she's like, I'm going to like be here for this doll. So the medium held a seance and it was discovered that the doll was the spirit of Annabelle Higgins. Who had lived on the property long before it had been turned into an apartment building. She lived a great life, and life was really good until she was found dead at 7. How she died is unknown. She said that she felt safe with Donna and Angie, and Donna, being this compassionate dumbass that she was, gave Annabelle permission to inhabit the doll and stay with them. And obviously that went great. Like, obviously that clearly is the end of the story and they all lived happily ever after because that was the right choice to make. So Lou, L-O-U, if you remember from like 20 seconds ago when I said that the doll was leaving these childlike handwritten messages, one of the things it said was help Lou. Lou is actually a real person. Lou was their friend and never trusted the doll from the beginning. I mean, yeah, it moves around the apartment on its own and stands. I do not trust this doll, clearly. One night, Lou was staying at their place and woke up from a reoccurring nightmare. When he woke up, he felt paralyzed and unable to move. And when he looked down, he saw that the doll was crawling up his legs and then started strangling him. He ended up passing out and woke up the next morning convinced that it wasn't a dream and decided that something needed to be done, which, yes, something needs to be done at this point. But I do want to play a little bit of devil's advocate on sleep paralysis. So sleep paralysis technically is just a regular part of the sleep cycle. It happens during the REM sleep where your body becomes paralyzed so you don't act out your dreams. I used to suffer badly from sleep paralysis. So when people use that phrase in the colloquial, they mean that the sleep paralysis is happening at times when it shouldn't. Like your body's going paralyzed before you're actually fully asleep or you wake up and you're still paralyzed. It's extremely scary when you don't know what it is. Different cultures have referred to it as like the devil sitting on your chest because it's scary. Some people though believe that that stage of being awake during sleep paralysis can allow you to reach a higher plane of existence and you can like do astral projection and stuff. I kind of look at it like mushrooms. It really depends on your mindset when you go into doing mushrooms. The same with sleep paralysis. If you think this is bad and scary and dangerous, that's how it's going to feel. And those are the type of hallucinations you're going to have. But if you think it's good and awesome, You're going to have good hallucinations. And that's the weird thing about sleep paralysis is that the hallucinations are so lifelike. I had no idea what this was until my third year of college. I was taking some general biology class and the teacher was talking about sleep paralysis and how a lot of people have alien abduction stories during that because the hallucinations are so strong. And I was like, I got abducted by aliens. Totally happened to me. I had been watching Ancient Aliens with my dad, of all things. And I had this dream hallucination where I was like levitated out of the bed. I started being taken through the window and I was like, hell nah. And I woke myself up. I actually learned to wake myself up a lot because the hallucinations were so scary. So if Annabelle the doll is really possessed, then damn, that sucks. But the other hand, Lou is in this house with this doll being told these stories, and some of the messages are directly about him and he's sleeping over. And the reoccurring nightmare part I thought was an interesting aspect because I don't know what the reoccurring nightmare was, but that for me was how sleep paralysis worked as well. It was kind of the same thing would happen, except for the alien thing. The abduction happened one time. One time's enough. Now, one night, Lou and Angie were alone in the apartment and they were preparing for a road trip. And to kind of set the scene, this is back when you actually had to, get physical maps and, draw out and figure out, the best route to take to wherever you're road tripping to. Suddenly, they heard a commotion from Donna's room. Suspecting someone had broken in, which I don't know why they wouldn't jump immediately to the haunted possessed doll that keeps moving around their house and interacting with things. But suspecting someone broke in, Lou went in to investigate. He waited for the noises to die down before looking in and turning on the lights. Everything was fine, except Annabelle was in a corner, and nobody puts Annabelle in a corner. As he approached the doll, he had this distinct feeling that somebody was creeping up behind him. He whirled around only to find that nobody was there. When he turned back towards the doll, he felt a hot, searing pain in his chest, and he began bleeding. 7 claw marks were cut into his skin. However, the marks were gone within 2 days. Finally, Donna was like, okay, this is enough. She was convinced that there was an evil spirit and not a little girl. Finally. So she contacted her Episcopalian priest, a man named Father Hagen. He felt like it was a spiritual matter and that they needed to contact a higher authority in the church. So he contacted Father Cook, who then put them in touch with the Warrens, who immediately came out. You remember from the first episode, they went to their Catholic church and there's just different tiers and there's a whole system set up before exorcisms and things so that a demonic can be taken care of. They usually send in the Warrens, apparently, who must have all these connections with the churches. It's interesting because Episcopalians and Catholics, fundamentally, morally, I guess, are different. The head of the Episcopalian church is a lesbian. They just voted to make God a non-binary figure and take away any of the previous pronouns, where Catholics are not like that. But ritualistically speaking, Catholics and Episcopalians are actually very similar. So I just thought that was interesting. So the doll itself was not in fact possessed, but manipulated by an inhuman presence. Spirits don't possess inanimate objects like houses or toys. They possess people. An inhuman spirit can attach itself to a place or an object. And this is what occurred in the case of Annabelle. The spirit manipulated the doll and created the illusion of being alive in order to get the recognition, to get people interested. But the thing is that the spirit was not looking to stay attached to the doll, but was eventually trying to find a human host. Which really seems like a roundabout way to do things. I don't know why they just don't attach to people immediately, or why they just don't stick to objects. But, so this is an evil, inhuman spirit attached to a doll. During the seance, it lied and made up the story about Annabelle Higgins. I'm not sure if Annabelle was a real girl, but I am going to continue to call the doll Annabelle, because otherwise that would just be confusing. This whole period of time, the leaving of the notes and moving around the house, that was known as the infestation period. It was laying the groundwork so it could finally possess a person, and the Warrens said that that was only a few weeks away. I guess it could be just for fun, to fuck with people. They were saying that if they hadn't been contacted when they were, within a couple weeks, someone would have died or had become possessed. Father Cook did an exorcism on the property to cleanse it of the spirit. Even though the doll wasn't possessed, for some reason the spirit clung to it, and even though they tried to rid the house of the spirit, it was the doll that the spirit stayed attached to. Because the doll was still possessed, the Warrens decided to take the doll with them. They actually have a museum in Connecticut that has a bunch of, like, the haunted objects and stuff that they have had collected over their years of ghost hunting and demon poaching. Though they have passed on, I believe the museum is still open for people to visit in Connecticut. The Warrens describe their ride home with the doll as bumpy, to say the least. Now, at one point, their brakes actually went out. So, even along the way, the doll was still trying to get at people. Back at their house in Connecticut, the Warrens, I guess, just kept the doll in their house for whatever reason. And it did the same stuff. It would keep moving around the house, posing, trying to get their attention, until the Warrens built a special case for the doll. I'm unaware if they put some sort of hex or blessing, or it's made out of some special, like, elvish wood or something, but for whatever reason, the case they built was able to contain the spirit, and the spirit now is permanently attached to the Raggedy Ann doll. One story, an account that happened after all this happened, was that this young couple, a man and a woman, went to their museum. And the guy was taunting the doll, saying how it wasn't real and that it should leave marks on him if it really could, that sort of thing. Ed Warren ended up making him leave, and they were still laughing all about the doll on their way out. On their way home from the museum, the couple ended up getting into a horrible motorcycle accident where he died and she was gravely injured. Just don't fuck with shit. There's always somebody being all egotistical in all these situations. And it's like, even if you don't believe in that kind of stuff, just be a little skeptical, you know? Don't go taunting evil spirits. I think that's really the moral of a lot of these stories. And that is Annabelle the Doll. Don't forget to check out the photos on @ghoststorypod on Instagram. Don't forget to like, share, rate, and subscribe. Thank you guys so much for listening. Until the next episode, happy Halloween. It's a spooky.